everybody. Welcome to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously, but who does, I think, not have a cold, unlike me.
No, no colds over here.
Must be nice. Must be nice.
Oh, it's fantastic.
We went to New York this weekend, and we were wrecked with colds. It was really, it was a time.
Yeah, traveling like 9 days before Christmas, that's a really cool, that's a good time to go through like four airports and
yeah. Well, in our defense, no airports. We did do a 2.5 hour drive to a train and then take a train for 3.5 hours to New York, which it was good. Actually, the benefit of that is you don't have to bring the car seats with you, because usually if we fly to New York, then you got to bring two car seats on the plane that you just use only one time during the trip, which is to strap into the Uber for the drive to Manhattan for 15 minutes.
Because everyone knows exactly what that Uber consists of. It is just like
yeah, the
white
car seats
knuckle.
Are for me and for Aaron.
We put the kids on the 47 bus. They go over the GW bridge by themselves. They'll be fine. But no, it's me and Aaron. We strap in. We got a 5-point like harness.
No butts on seats. Mm-hmm. Not in that city.
I'm not gonna go all Dale Earnhardt, you know, coming across the bridge.
So that's a death. Is that a death joke? Because he died.
Oh, he did.
He died in a car.
Oh man,
can't say that.
I feel so callous now.
Yeah, I bet lots of our listeners are big NASCAR fans and know that.
Woof.
Can't say that.
What are we going to do?
So to New York. It was cool to be so sick when you're in a city that requires you to be on foot so much. And drag two children around. Our kids have gotten New York soft because we haven't been there with them in a couple of years. And obviously we don't live in Chicago anymore. And so like after the first like 3 hours, Maple was like, why are we on the subway again? Can we take a car?
In her defense, I think I said those exact same words to you a few times when we've been in New York.
Well, that is true. That's fair.
Now we're on the Q line again. We were just on the Q line.
What is the Q line? Oh, man. That's why my voice might sound a little off today. So Jeremy hasn't messed with the filter. I just have a cold. Speaking of colds, you made a drink, which is a good segue. What is your cocktail today?
Is one part vodka.
Okay. Navy strength?
I don't know. No, just Tito's. Tito's.
Gin. Gin was a Navy strength.
Gin is
it's
a Navy strength.
It's been so long since Pinckney Bend has abandoned us. I lost track.
One part vodka. I'm going to guess, eyeball, maybe 4 or 5 parts, one of Amy's sodas. I don't know. 7-Up with nothing in it.
7-Up zero sugar.
Yeah, it's awful.
It's water.
Yeah.
It's carbonated water.
Yeah. And then add ice to taste. And then there you go.
I love using ice for taste. That's primarily the use for ice that I have.
In this case, I'm adding ice to remove taste from the drink. I would prefer if the whole drink was ice.
Yeah. Yeah.
But here,
how is it?
Not good.
I thought we started off during pre-show you telling me how surprisingly good it was.
That was maybe just like that was just me coming downstairs and getting away from the chaos.
It was just the buzz of peace and quiet.
God, this is fantastic down here. Me and my thoughts and some leaking walls.
That's cool.
Just great.
That's cool. What did you do this weekend?
Went ice skating again.
Why?
I don't know. I thought, why not?
Did you do a good job?
I did a much better job. I stayed on the ice skates the whole time. I didn't get off of the ice skates.
That's really good.
I was pretty excited about it. And I saw the big movie show.
Oh,
I saw the big one.
Evil movie.
The big one. The you big bad.
The one about the witch.
The one.
And the other witch.
And the other witch, but they're both pretty. So I'm confused.
Not what I was raised to believe witch's whole deal was.
Had to move 2 seats away from my family.
And you liked it? It was good?
It was good. I had like literally no idea. I knew what it was called. I knew that it was about the Wizard of Oz.
How do you not know any idea? So you've never seen the musical. You've never read the book.
No. I knew it was about the Green Witch and how she became bad. Or how she became, you know, whatever. Yeah. And
I don't want to spoil anything, but it might be about how she became good.
Yeah.
I know you sat for 2.5 hours to watch only one half of the story.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But
And then Amy, about 20 minutes into it, something happens on screen. I'm not gonna say what happened. Something happens.
You're the only person in the world who has no idea about what Wicked is, so I think you could say it.
Okay, that's fine. So, whenever she sees, spoiler alert, anybody that doesn't know what goes on in Wicked, I guess fast forward like 45 seconds. So whenever Elphaba like goes behind like the waterfall or whatever, and she sees Jeff Goldblum's big like statue head, mm-hmm. and Amy leans over and she says, I was so excited that Jeff Goldblum plays her father. And I said, oh, okay. And then she goes, oh, wait, you're not. Forget I said that. I was like, did you just ruin the whole movie in the first 20 minutes we are in here?
You know what? I'm trying to actually remember. I don't know if that was in the stage musical. I mean, they allude to it, but that's a pretty big surprise in the book for sure.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I don't know if they'll do that in the movie. Maybe.
I don't know. I guess we will see soon enough. I will know either way.
They don't bear much resemblance. I'll say that. So it is surprising.
Yeah. So that was my favorite part of the whole thing, was Amy just getting that look of horror, like, oh, fuck, why did I just tell you that? It's like, you know nothing about this movie. You've been sitting down for 10 minutes.
Again, in her defense, the book came out like 30 years ago.
Sure, sure.
This is not in the, you know, it's been like the number one Broadway musical for like 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you know
uh-huh.
That Idina Menzel was in the Broadway production of it?
Oh, my God. The Idina Menzel?
I did not know that.
Did you know who Idina Menzel was?
The green one, the Green Witch.
No. I should have been more clear. you didn't know she was Elphaba. Is that name Idina Menzel? Is that a familiar name to you?
She's in Frozen. Yes, I know that she's in Frozen.
Okay, so you do understand that she plays roles and she does.
Yes,
singing and she's acting and stuff. Okay,
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. That's not really her in the movie. Yeah.
She's playing part. So you know that she's a singing and dancing type of gal.
I know that now. Yes.
I think is a reductive way to say it.
Yes.
One time I saw Idina Menzel live, and when I was in Chicago, we would go to, I'm blanking. What's the big amphitheater north of the city by like Highland Park? I can't think of the name.
The Pavilion place?
Yeah. What is it called? Ravinia, that's the one.
Oh, you're talking about Ravinia?
I saw Idina live once in Ravinia, and she was wonderful, but it was funny. She two things about that show that really stand out. Number one, she had just come from another show the night before in like Milwaukee, so you know, very mm-hmm. close, where she had just totally blown out her voice, and so she was hoarse the whole time. And so then she finally gets around to doing Defying Gravity, which mm-hmm. I think you saw. That was in this.
That was the last. Yeah, that was the last.
Yeah, so
that was the last song.
There's you know, the notes go high, they go big.
It's a big song.
Yep. Whoop, way up there.
Yeah, I would say, so like that's symbolic of her defying gravity if she sings high. Do you get that? You get that now?
Well, it's kind of the opposite of defying gravity.
Yeah, gravity makes you go down. She goes high. She's defying it. So she's singing
high. But in this
show,
yeah, I get it. Okay, I like it.
Okay,
Anyway, hey,
as an observer,
Stephen Schwartz, I get it. Okay, but listen.
As an observer is what I'm picking up on, so...
Well, she was doing that though, but her voice was shot, and so instead of doing the high notes, she adjusted the song, I will say, very beautifully, but to do them as low notes instead. So she went down at those parts, and I was like, I don't know, it feels like I overpaid for this. The second thing that was notable about Idina Menzel live is that woman cusses like a goddamn sailor. I have never heard a professional human being in any field squeeze as many offensive curse words into a 2-hour time period as I heard at Idina Menzel, which was great. It was fantastic.
Sure.
Really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So you didn't know that she was the Elphaba. That was like her. I mean, she was a big Broadway star before, but that was like her big breakout. It's cool. Probably what got her that Elphaba, Elsa gig.
I would imagine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She's also, Hey man, if you're going to go down the Idina rabbit hole, can I recommend Wild Party? The Wild Party. Go listen to that.
The Wild Party. Man.
Wild Party. Now there's two shows called The Wild Party. Mm-hmm. You're looking for the Lipa version. All right. There was two guys working on a show called The Wild Party, and then they got in a
Jeremy
big fight.
Jeremy, cut all this, right?
Nope. This is important. This is really important content that our fans are desperate to know. And the two writers, they got in a big fight and they split. And they said, I'm going to write my version. The other guy said, I'm going to write my version. And then one of them had one version. The other one had Idina Menzel and Taye mm-hmm. Diggs in it, mm-hmm. which may be where they met and got married. I'm not sure about that. But anyway, so the one that was not with the good people, that was the successful one. And okay. the one with Idina did not do well. But it's great. And you should listen to it. You'll like
okay.
it.
Okay.
It's like Pagliacci, except set in like the roaring 20s.
Boy, just so much happened right there.
I know. I get so excited.
I know who Taye Diggs is, though.
yeah. He is a man. What a handsome man, huh?
I know, right?
That man is a talent. Well, this is a ghost podcast. And ghost I would adjacent. Like to tell you a ghost story. Is there anything else before we get into the ghost story?
No sponsors this week.
Well, it's kind of awkward if you call it out. We don't have one.
We're free to cut things. We can ask Jeremy to cut whatever we want. But are we not eating this week? Is that what I'm understanding? It's fine. I mean, it's like the week before Christmas. It's okay. My kids, they'll figure out something else to do.
I'll double check my notes. Let me check here. Is This a Ghost is sponsored by Smart Labels.
Yay!
Your kids get Christmas presents. And listen, this episode drops on December 25th. So it is, hey folks, Merry Christmas, first of mm-hmm. all, first and foremost,
oh,
from
sorry.
Us and from Smart Labels.
I didn't know if you celebrated, so I didn't want to like bring it up. But you know.
Who me? You didn't know if I celebrated?
No, our you know.
Oh our yeah, 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 our yeah, yeah. Also, it's the first day of Hanukkah today, which is very late. So happy Hanukkah!
Yeah, you can celebrate either one of those. Really?
Yeah, yeah. Ramadan's coming up soon, so mm-hmm. whatever you're celebrating, happy one to you. Mm-hmm.
If you're just celebrating being off work for like a day and a half, that's fine too.
Then you're with Patrick and you're going to have a, was it one part vodka, four parts 7-Up water?
Sugar-free 7-Up. Make sure it's sugar-free 7-Up. That's the tasty one.
Anyway, this is an ad for our friends at Smart Labels. And now it's Christmas. Hopefully you're listening to this. I assume you're listening to this with your family around the presents, and you're not letting anyone open a single present until this episode is over, which is how we like to celebrate it in our houses. But you know, the bad news is, of course, now it's too late for you to buy Smart Labels for your white elephants or your Christmas. So that's a little awkward, but I have an idea. What's your New Year's resolution, Pat?
Oh, as always, take a lot of human growth hormone and just rip shit for 6 months.
As always, you said.
Yeah, well, that's always my resolution. It has never happened.
I was gonna say, I've known you for a long time, and that's surprising to hear. Well, this year, your resolution could be to get more organized. All that wet stuff you've got in your basement,
mm-hmm.
you can put that in a wet stuff box.
Mm-hmm.
Keep threatening to
day.
Do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Now's the time.
And Christmas is over, so I'm certain if you're an American, you have more shit now than you did yesterday.
And a lot of it is surprisingly wet for reasons that no one can put a finger on. And so if your resolution is to get more organized this year, Smart Labels is the number one solution. I'll just say it. It's the number one solution for you. Smart Labels are QR-coded, color-coded stickers that you put on your boxes, your bins, your bags, anything that starts with a B, really. You can put it on your baby, anything. And you put it on your box. You fill your box with stuff. You take out the app. You scan the Smart Label. And you say, okay, in this box are wet clothes. And then you scan the other one. So mm-hmm. this is dry clothes.
And then your wife yells at you, those are laundry baskets, stupid. There's a reason one of them is wet and one of them is not wet.
And you say, too late. Basket starts with a B. So there's a Smart Label on it and we're locking it away. So you type in the app, what's in the box. You take a picture of the box if you want. You store it wherever you want. In the app, you put a label there. It says, this one's in the attic, or this one's in the basement, or this one's in that closet that mysteriously appeared last week. We don't know where it goes. It doesn't seem like it connects to the house. It's sort of a house of leaves situation. But it seems like it's really roomy. So we're going to just shove things in there. Then you just type that into the app. And then next year or next season or next week or whenever you're looking for your stuff in your boxes, your bags, your bins, your buckets, your everything that starts with the B, your babies, you just open the app and you say wet clothes. And you type that in there. It'll show you your QR code. It'll show you your label. It'll tell you where you put it. It'll show you a picture of the box in its place. If you've done that, it's really, really great. This is they're very reasonably priced. It's too reasonably priced really. they could charge. I'm gonna say five times as much.
Easy
value that I get out of that. But they don't. So you can go and live up to your New Year's resolution by going to Amazon and searching for smart labels. You'll find them. They're great. They got some really fun colors, and they are an absolute lifesaver. Patrick has some.
Absolutely. Everything in my life is all hunky-dory now.
Yep. As you can tell, if you're watching a YouTube video, you look at the basement, you're like, wow, he's really putting the elbow grease to organize that basement. But he could if he wanted, is the point, because he has smart labels, and so can you. So, go buy smart labels. You won't regret it. Live up to that New Year's resolution, and be a 2025 hero. Hey, also, before we get started, just a reminder, everyone, next week, we are recording a live Zoom show, on December 30th. It's New Year's Eve. It's going to be the show that's going to land, about 10 days later, as is normal. But if you want to be part of the gang, come hang out with us. It's pretty fun. Mm-hmm. It's a Monday night. You get to pour yourself a drink. You get to come and watch Patrick and me do this live. We drag Ryan into it. Producer Ryan.
He hates it.
He's uncomfortable. He does not like it.
My best part, low key, really... is Ryan hating every part of it. And then eventually he turns his camera off and stops responding to text messages. And you realize Ryan has gone to bed.
He's so grumpy. It's very fun. And then you just sit there in the chat with other Ghost Plus members and talk. So in order to get an invite to that, you have to be part of Ghost Plus. But you know what? Ghost Plus has a 7-day free trial. If you join right now, you can get all the content we have for free. You can get the access to that show for free. And then if you don't like it, you can just cancel it. We don't care. Mm-hmm. We do care, but you can just do it. It's okay. I'm not going to like send anyone to your house about it or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't ask for your address.
We could start.
Well, so okay, we might send someone to the house just to make sure you're okay.
Just to see. Yeah. It's a youth. It's a wellness check.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a wellness check.
Yeah, it's a wellness check. That's how we get out of it, according to my lawyers. A lot of fun stuff. We just dropped a new, so very weird show with AI that people aren't liking. people are having strong reactions to that probably won't continue, but it's worth checking out once. And also for that live show, happy to announce we're going to have a special guest joining us.
Oh,
so besides we don't usually Ryan? Do a third host, but,
be a crowded studio.
Really trying to kind of just, I like to get my ducks in a row in case Patrick dips out. I feel like mm-hmm. Patrick could just stop doing the show at any given week, might lose interest at any point. So we have, I think someone really fun is going to join us, for that live show, a third host, Megan Phillips. She's what does she want to be called here? Let's see. I have this written down here. The best friend that you didn't know you needed, Canadian legend, Megan Phillips.
Oh, Canadian. Oh, is it going to be a clean show then?
No, but here's the deal. So, we don't want to offend her too much because we might need all the Canadian friends we can get come January 20th. So this is really for all of us in America.
Okay? We want to be on the record making fun of Canada anytime for the next 4 years.
Absolutely not. Megan's a blast. She's super funny. She's a writer. She's a comedian. She writes songs and stuff. She's an actor. She's really great. And she's going to join us because I don't know why exactly, but she's going to hang out. So we'll see how that goes. And if you want to be here live to do that and to chat with all of us and to talk with Megan, just join Ghost Plus. Again, it's totally free for the first week. All right.
Cool.
Patrick's convinced.
I'm in. I'm game.
All right. With all that said, now we're recording for an hour. We're ready to finally get into the story. Patrick, are you ready to hear what I would call a very holly jolly Christmas ghost story?
I've been ready.
Oh, no. That's the sound of you getting ready. William de Mandeville was a person who definitely existed in Great Britain sometime before the year 1100 AD.
Oh, okay. There's a lot of time before 1100 AD. I mean, at least 1100 years.
That's true. Okay, I could be a little clearer. So who definitely existed in Great Britain immediately before the year 1100 AD.
Oh, okay. So sometime like between 1000 and 1100.
Yeah, somewhere ish, in there. I don't know how old he was when he died. I couldn't work backwards, but they're not great at birth records.
Mm. Yeah, and the carbon dating is a little inconclusive on this guy.
Also, as we'll see, it's kind of hard to to carbon date. He's missing some pieces. that's for later in the show. One of the things we do know about William de Mandeville was that he was one of the wealthiest lords of England at the time.
Okay.
Very hoity-toity. Whew. He was very well regarded in medieval London, which I assume was probably pretty easy to get. High regard. Sure. In medieval London.
Oh, you have the water on you. You have the fewest sores on your face. Well, there you go. You're in the highest regard.
Are you a king?
Are those both legs?
My. Someone's a show off. He was for a time the constable of the Tower of London. And the Tower of London was only built in 1078. So we do know.
Starting to narrow it down a little bit then. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we do know that William was the guard at the tower for the very first political prisoner ever to be held there.
Oh.
A man named Ranulf Flambard.
Flambard. Yes. Yes, I recall.
You do?
Yes, a political prisoner. He was, he sided with the other political party. You know, the ones that wanted to disrupt things.
Yeah, I can't remember which king was he against?
He was against Edward, first off.
Which Edward?
The first Edward.
The first
Edward first, yeah.
Okay, sure, I'll look into that. So Flambard's story is sort of convoluted. Or at least it was at like midnight last night when I was trying to get this fucking done. So I didn't go too deep into his story, but all it's important to know about Flambard is that he was the Tower of London's first important prisoner, as I noted, and that while he was being guarded by William de Mandeville, he did escape. So they are 0-1.
The first one gets out. That's fine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, really, it's how are you going to know? How are you going to know what the best escape is?
The tower is a prototype.
Right. Exactly.
Yes,
absolutely. This is a pressure test. That's what this is. You know, we're trying to figure out where the leaks are. Oh, we didn't put bars on that window. Maybe we should start putting bars on some of the windows.
That window happens to be the size of five men across.
Yeah.
Okay. That's on us.
It's secured by picket fence in the backyard. Okay. That's on me. I thought it'd be more secure.
We did have the one human guard who was pretty capable. The other 20 guards, all pigs. And now we know that's not the way to go.
In retrospect, having one guard for 24 hours out of the day was not a great idea. After about 3 days, he started to hallucinate and he actually let the prisoner free.
He did think that the prisoner was a pig. So this was super embarrassing for the king, who was, who again? Can you remind me?
Edward. Edward the First. Yep.
In some ways you're kind of close. It was actually Henry the First.
Oh, that was my fourth guess.
It had to have been. I mean, yeah. I would have said Max Third. Like that. Yeah. There's not so many. Also, he was a first, so that was pretty good. So this was Henry's first big prisoner, and the prisoner obviously just like walked out. Mm. So he's big mad. Mm-hmm. And we don't actually know, like, we don't know about the escape. Like, it may have been William's fault. It may not have been William's fault. As you said, pressure testing and all that. But Henry, either way, he doesn't care about about the details. He gets real mad at William.
Mm.
You and these 20 pigs had one job. Now, he doesn't kill William.
Okay.
But he does confiscate his wealthiest estates.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And he also strips William of his constableship.
Okay.
Which makes a lot of sense.
You can't, that's kind of a given at this point.
That one I don't fault him for.
Yeah.
So he's no longer in charge of the Tower of London.
I am kind of amused that the only person they can find to guard the Tower of London is somebody who is already like a filthy rich landowner, because there's probably like literally two types of people in the world at this point: filthy rich landowners and people that are subsisting on dirt mostly. And so Are you going to have one of those guys guard the tower? He's probably just going to let the guy out. I'll be perfectly honest. He's probably going to let the guy out and probably try to eat him. So
I think he's going to empathize. One of these people is going to empathize with the typical prisoner a little bit more than the other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
These are political appointees. This is Donald Trump appointing his daughter-in-law to the ambassador of Greece.
Yeah.
Or whatever Guilfoy is doing now.
He would appoint like Herschel Walker to guard this prison is basically what's going on here.
Oh my God. It would be the best prison because it would be so easy to escape. But in that version, then they show up at the prison and Herschel Walker is behind bars. Yeah. And he's like, I don't know what happened.
I know. He said we were here to take turns. And I'm beginning to think we weren't.
But he was here for 3 days. I've only been here for 12 hours. So yeah. I will wait it out and see if he comes back.
He should be here in a couple of days. Just a couple of days.
Poor Herschel. okay. So William is stripped of his constableship. He loses lots of his estates. We don't know a whole lot about his life after this, but he just sort of like fades into obscurity. But we do know that he had a son, at least one. He had one important son named Geoffrey.
Geoffrey.
It's probably Jeffrey, but it's, you know, G-E-O. Okay. Geoffrey.
Geoffrey, yeah. Like Jeffrey yeah. Rush. That's how he spells it, too.
It is. So it's probably just Jeffrey.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. God, I love Jeffrey Rush. What's he doing these days, you think?
Ooh, he's probably dead. I think he's probably dead by now.
He can't possibly be
no,
dead.
No, he looked 1,000 years old. He's
been 1,000 years old for 50 years. Exactly. Oh, man. What a guy. Anyway, so Geoffrey de Mandeville grew up pretty mad that King Henry had taken a lot of his birthright away. And so when King Henry dies in 1135, Geoffrey sees a chance for... we're going to get emails from our British listeners. And I just...
It's Geoffrey. Geoffrey. Can you Geoffrey. Not say it? Can you not Geoffrey. Say it?
I've never heard it pronounced with an I before. It's Geoffrey. Geoffrey saw... he sees a chance for some revenge. Now, Henry... He had planned on making his daughter. So Henry had a son. His son dies. Mm-hmm. Oh no, your heir is gone.
Right.
What do you do? So he plans on making his daughter Matilda his heir.
Oh, okay.
Which is, you know,
she's a mischievous sort, but I like the choice here. Okay, this is.
She's a big reader though, and that's important. So Matilda's the next best choice, and people aren't necessarily keen on the idea of bending the knee to a woman. If you can imagine a time when people are like, I don't know, like the alternative is so bad, but this one's a woman.
I thought this was the 12th century. Thank you very much.
Boy. So Henry goes around and he calls his barons in and he makes them pinky swear to accept Matilda as their queen. And you cannot break a pinky swear, obviously.
Sure, obviously.
They swear. Yeah. But Henry also has a nephew, a boy nephew, whose name is Stephen. Stephen of, I'm going to say Blois, B-L-O-I-S.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Blois. I'm going to say Blois.
Yeah, but I'm Blois.
Save your emails, everyone, because I'll be honest with you. It doesn't matter. I could not care less. After Henry died, Stephen of Blois claimed that actually Henry changed his mind on his deathbed.
Oh, yeah. This is what notaries are for. I got to be honest with you.
Exactly.
This is, yeah.
Say what you want about notaries, bullshit. But oh, yeah, man.
That's why you get a will written up. You got a notary. You know, you got
three lawyers.
Mm-hmm. You got an estate executor. Otherwise, all this shit gets thrown into probate. Nobody wants that.
No one wants that. Now, I will say Henry does have a whole bunch of barons who did a pinky swear.
Mm, okay, well.
It's like the notary of the time.
I would think at that point, like the pinky swear rights would be, okay, then one of us has to stab Stephen. Like that seems like.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Let's see how this pans out. So Stephen claims that Henry said on his deathbed, actually, you know what? Women can't be king. I decide I want to make my nephew Stephen king. You'll be shocked to learn this, but all those barons who pinky swore mm-hmm. they would take Matilda, mm-hmm. Stephen quickly gained all their support.
Ouch. Yeah. It's a real 11th century move there, guys. I don't know what to tell you. This is,
they're not elevated like we are here. Mm-hmm. What century is this?
The last one.
Stephen is crowned king at Westminster within a month. The patriarchy is thriving. The
patriarchy does not need a courtship process. This is straight to the monkey.
So, yeah, this is going great. Dudes will grab on any reason to support, to not support a woman for office instead of going to therapy. One of the barons to support Stephen's claim was our good friend, Joffrey, our new friend, Jeffrey, Jeffrey de Mandeville. Now, this wasn't just an easy throne grab. So obviously he was coronated pretty easily, but crowning Stephen King led to a 17-year civil war between him and Matilda.
Was it worth it? Was it really worth it?
To whom?
I don't know. That's a rhetorical thing. I don't know.
I'll tell you, for one of them, I think it was, because one of them is going to come out pretty okay in the end. This period of conflict is known as the Anarchy.
Oh, that's much better than War of the Roses. That's
way better than War of the Roses.
That's kind of a wussy one, you know?
Yeah.
The Anarchy, that's a cool one.
It's very cool. You could just see like the shields with like the A with like the circle and the lines. Yeah.
And then like the other side has the same shield because they're like, no.
Oh, no.
No, shit.
And that's what makes it anarchy. Mm-hmm. You're just killing everyone. You don't know. You don't know who's on what side.
Stabbing yourself in the foot. Maybe I'm the bad guy.
I don't know. I saw it on my shield. Could be bad. So this goes on. So now as a reward for his support during the anarchy, Stephen, new king, he makes Geoffrey the Earl of Essex.
Oh, that's a big one.
It's a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. I've heard of Essex. We had a hotel in Chicago named after it. Mm-hmm. So it's probably pretty big.
Most of the lights were always illuminated on the sign. Sometimes they weren't.
I don't know if that's actually true. Now, actually, it's a travel lodge, but they did keep the Essex sign on the roof, and it is in bad shape.
The Best Western at Essex in Chicago.
I was on the same block as my building at Columbia. I pass that bad boy every day, and it's not great. it's not great. So he's Earl of Essex, which is, I guess, fine. Now he's Earl of Travel Lodge. And by 1141, the king had returned to Geoffrey the lucrative manors of Essex.
Oh,
so I think this was his father's estates.
Who maybe had them? Like,
I think the crown did.
Okay.
Man, don't ask me questions. I just
wondering if the person who like got that earlship is like, well, what the fuck did I do? I didn't, you know.
Hey, man, come on. I don't know. One thing I've learned from like 3 years now doing this podcast is that the things that I like cast off from the centuries and centuries of British history as like, this is a minor point. Someone will absolutely like be able to recall that. Now, like their history classes must be so much better than ours because they are just, they're very, I don't know. We're going to hear a lot about it. So don't ask me any questions about any of this stuff.
This is true. Like ours start like 5 or 6 centuries later and it goes straight to stupid. Like there's no classical period in America. There's no like riding around in beautiful armor and knights and queens and ladies. It goes straight to like, you know, just chaos and bloodshed and then the light bulb. And then here we are. So,
yeah, ours starts in the 1700s and doesn't always even include the Civil War in the 1800 part. So that's where we are. Now, once he's back in charge here, Geoffrey builds up some things. He built some new buildings on the. He's tending his monopoly board.
While the war is going on. While the war is going on.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
I'll just a little peek behind the curtain here on Geoffrey. He's not committed to the war. He just wants this land. But then in 1141, King Stephen is defeated by Matilda in a battle.
Yeah. Like the orphanage lady. Yeah.
Like what?
Like the lady from the orphanage.
Is this that Matilda? A wicked thing?
Isn't that Matilda?
Oh, Trunchbull.
Yeah, Trunchbull.
Yeah. So in this, sorry, who's so
who is he? Yeah. Huh. So Steven is Trunchbull.
Okay.
Yeah. And Matilda is Matilda. So
yeah, yeah, makes sense. Yeah. I mean, Steven has to be Trunchbull if Matilda is Matilda. I just.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
Or you can use the real names too. It's fine. If it's less confusing
for you. No, it's King Trunchbull and Matilda. So Steven is defeated. He's thrown into prison. And immediately Joffrey says, I believe Empress Matilda to be sovereign of this land. I always have. I always will. It's Matilda. Chin chin. Oh, or whatever they say when they declare.
No, that's what they say. Yeah, I see Mary Poppins. I know what they say.
Then he swept some chimneys and he was on his way. So he immediately switches sides and's like, yeah, it's Matilda all the way. Like, I pretended to be for Steven, but really, I mean, Matilda, we all knew, right? You and me, we did.
Yeah.
Now, Matilda finds this extraordinary act of cowardice rather impressive, and she forgives all of his father's debts.
Oh, okay.
Okay. She grants him, Geoffrey, the Norman lands of Eudo le Deptfer, which I do not know anything about. Please do not ask any questions.
Okay.
She appoints him sheriff of Essex.
Okay.
Which, if Robin Hood, the Disney version of Robin Hood, has taught me anything, it's that you get to walk around with a lot of gold coins in a purse. Uh-huh. And a lot.
And that you are a wolf now. this seems to be the good place to be if in British history, not being the king. The king seems like a risky move. You want to be the toady. That's what you want to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No one goes for the toady.
No, absolutely. The guy doesn't do anything. He just builds houses on his land. And then when the king switches, say, yeah, I definitely like you more than the last guy. Oh, yeah. How would you like some more land then?
I must for my country. Oh, I stopped that suit. So he's a sheriff of Essex and Hertfordshire and Middlesex and London. All those things. He's sheriff of all those. So his gold purse is pretty big. And he's also... they also reconfirm his custody of the Tower of London.
Oh, yes.
So Geoffrey's in charge of the tower.
And is Stephen in the tower? Is that where he is right now?
That's pretty ironic. Question. I think he must be.
Yeah.
Yeah. This fucking guy. So again, like, he did support Stephen the whole time until he was caught. And then suddenly Matilda's like, well, here's all this stuff. Thank you for switching sides. I don't know. Anyway, so he's got everything. This whole country is his chessboard now. But then, later that same year, Stephen is released.
Oh, okay.
Matilda, I will say, I think is
yeah.
a way too good of a.
This is a monarch. Very like Scandinavian incarceration system here. This is yeah. I'm not a big fan of this here.
Listen, I'm very anti capital punishment, 100%, like all the way through. However, yeah. Matilda, you gotta kill this guy. you gotta take that head.
I mean, come on, this is the 12th century here. We've been over this.
So, but no, Stephen's released, and I don't know. So Stephen, he's free, and the
returns to a life of regicide. So it's
correct. The anarchy resumes. So any hope of Matilda had of just kind of living in peace by letting him go, that was not thoroughly thought out. The war's back on. Now, of course, this puts our boy Geoffrey in a bit of a pickle. He's feeling a little awkward.
He is definitely writing two different sets of letters right now from his desk.
And just sweating profusely onto both of them. So he has a big decision to make. Do you want to... So it's 50-50. Do you want to take a guess at who he goes with?
I'm going to have to say he goes back to Stephen. Just, you know, I have to say Stephen.
Well, Stephen is a man.
Yeah. So I'm playing
a lot of sense.
I'm playing a pretty strong hand here, I'll be honest. All right.
Well, let's see. So Geoffrey, he says, you know what? Stephen, I liked you best all along.
Yeah. This is great. That's more like it. Okay.
Now, again, Stephen is not at this point king.
Sure.
He is now the usurper against the queen. Mm-hmm. And so I'll go out on a limb and say this might have been a bridge too far, because the war continues and Stephen reclaims his rights as king, though of course he's not coronated. Mm-hmm. And then a year and a half later, in 1143, Stephen is like he's fighting back, and like I don't know exactly what happened here, but during 1143 he was like, hey, wait a minute, Geoffrey, you son of a bitch. You know what? On second thought, yeah. I might kill you. I don't like you very much. You were not actually the best person to be over here. Hmm. And Geoffrey is like, oh God, please, please. The one thing I don't want is to be dead. he says, what if I give you my castles of Plessy and Saffron Walden?
Mm, okay, yeah.
Which are probably pronounced like Smarflefer and Dimmerlybrew.
These are lesser castles.
These have to be. Yeah. I went to London once, mm-hmm. and traveled around a bit of the English countryside. Never once heard of a Plessy or Saffron Walden.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I'll give you these castles as well as custody of Tower of London.
That's an albatross anyway. You don't want that. That's just
This is like the perfect negotiation, because that's exactly right. Like, you don't want it, but it's a big name. It's mm-hmm. flashy, you know. Mm-hmm. So Stephen is like, okay. I was not going to say yes, but the Tower of London, I'll take it back. So that happens. Geoffrey gives him his stuff, and then Geoffrey's allowed to live, but he's on the list for mm-hmm. both monarchs at this point. Now, the anarchy itself lasts finally until 1153.
Oh, Geoffrey's sweating bullets this whole time.
Oh, my God. That's like a decade of him just living, just like not having a regular bowel movement for 10 years. So, long story short, at the end of it, Stephen is like, all right, listen. my son died, so this is stupid. Mm-hmm. I have no heirs. Like, whatever. Hey, Matilda. Mm. I'll make you a deal. I'll be king now, but when I die, then your son, Henry Plantagenet, mm-hmm. which is probably not how you pronounce that, he can be my successor. He can be king. Mm-hmm. We good? And Matilda, who is probably like, fucking this fucking patriarchy. I hate this. She's like, all right, fuck, fine. So they make this agreement where Matilda will never be in charge, but her son will be once Stephen is dead.
Okay.
So Stephen wins the Game of Thrones.
Right. But she also now has an incredible incentive for Stephen to not be alive anymore.
Well, that's tricky. <huh? laughs> Now, having, knowing Matilda, as I think we all do pretty well now, doesn't seem like she's actually the type to murder him in his sleep, which mm-hmm. is a real shame. Anyway, so that's the plan, but Geoffrey, he's been stewing for the last decade that mm-hmm. Stephen took all his toys away. And so, so then he launches a rebellion against King Stephen.
Oh, interesting.
And he stands up and he shouts, Stephen, I shall tear thee down to the grapes. I made that up. He didn't say that, but that seems like a really cool thing for someone to say. He said something probably to that effect. Mm. And then immediately ran away.
Oh.
To the Fenlands. Mm. Now, the Fenlands of England are lands that are fen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you probably know what fen means.
Yeah, it's that, like that wavy grass. It's the wavy grass. That's the Fenlands right there. That's what fen is. Fen is a wavy grass.
You said it with such confidence, I'm uh-huh. inclined to believe you.
This is why I'm so good at the game every year.
God, it's making a lot of sense. The Fenlands, they're a very marshy part of the country.
Mm, right, yep.
Yeah, with the wavy marshy grass.
Wavy marsh. Yeah, the wavy marsh.
It's in East England, so he runs out there and... And it's from this very marshy part of the country that no one goes to that he kind of mounts his defense. So I don't know. It's like, I don't know. It doesn't feel like to me like a real rebellion if you do it from very far away. but he has, he's not
he's trying something. Type. You know, he's, YOLO, right?
He's giving it a shot. Yeah. Yeah, give it a go. So he goes out to the Isle of Ely. Mm-hmm. So here's Ely. Now, you know it's not an isle anymore.
It's very much surrounded by the green parts. So that tells me land.
So it's here.
Right.
That's where he is. All right. Mm-hmm. Any questions about that?
The Isle of Ely being in the middle of land? Yeah, a couple questions, I guess. There is a travel lodge right next to it, which is nice.
It used to be called the Essex, but now it's just the travel lodge. Okay, so it's not an isle, but it was at this time an isle. It was surrounded by water. Now, the fens, like I said, were marshland. Mm-hmm. Apparently, all the fens were drained in the 17th century.
Oh.
To make England solid. I guess it wasn't always like a solid landmass. I learned a lot during this research.
After eating a lot of British cuisine over the years, that does not track at all. They are very much fans of just marshy stuff in general.
Yeah. But so, you know, in the 12th century, though, it was all connected or disconnected, I should say, by water. So he's out here. Pretend that was an island, and he's out there. He uses Ramsey Abbey as his home base. So it's this abbey, this church that's on the island. And in September of 1144, not long after he started this, I guess we'll call it a rebellion because he did, but doesn't feel true to form.
A one man show here. This is like a one man rebellion against
him. Yeah. He leads a group of men. I don't know. I was thinking about like what's a good, you know, collective noun for a group of men who are just marching to their doom. I think maybe a distemper of men.
I could see. Yeah. It seems like it's got posse qualities. Mm-hmm. But that's probably about the size of it as well, I would figure.
Yeah, and I don't know if they are so motivated as a posse. They're kind of being dragged along, I think. But he leads them in an attack on Burwell Castle, which is one of Stephen's castles. Mm-hmm. And during this siege, Joffrey receives, quote, a slight arrow wound.
Okay.
But Joffrey's nobility. Mm-hmm. And so that's a lot for him to take.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And the hemophilia alone is going to kill you from the slightest arrow wound.
For sure. This is all too much for him to bear. And the poor little lad, he dies from this slight wound.
he dies from getting a nick from an arrow. Yeah. You are not proving anybody wrong with criticisms of the monarchy here, guy.
No, this is... this tracks with my understanding of nobility. If only
every one of my ancestors hadn't married their cousin, I would not be so weak.
My veins are in strange places because of it. And that one slight nick to the first layer of my skin cut my 10 arteries. I assume he probably got like sepsis, maybe, which is way to go.
He probably got a bunch of stuff.
That's true.
They're not
sepsis, gangrene.
Yeah,
AIDS. Maybe.
I'll give you a clue. They don't wash the arrows first. They really don't.
They do pull them out of dead bodies.
Right. Yeah.
And back into the quiver you go, mm-hmm. my friend.
Oh. What a horrible but effective way to fight in the Middle Ages. Just like
they were dealing with like chemical warfare,
like a big bucket of shit, and you just put all the arrows in it. And then you pull one arrow out, and you're like, "Oh, this is gonna be a humdinger right here."
I don't know what germs are, but this seems really effective. This is amazing. So Joffrey dies, and now this part is important. Upon his death, by this slight wound, Joffrey places a curse across the entirety of his 10 former estates.
Oh, okay. Someone wrote this down.
I have a related question about this, which is like,
at what point does he curse? Yeah.
Yes. How do you think one dying person, like how and when do they curse a thing upon death?
I wonder if he knew like in this march with his kind of underwhelming posse, if he like wrote a letter beforehand, like just in case this doesn't work out so good.
I was wondering, like maybe he gets the arrow wound and it's like a scratch.
Yeah.
And he's like, everyone gather around.
Yeah. Bring me quill and paper.
Yeah. And everyone else is like, Joffrey, that's that's nothing. You're going to be fine. He's like, no, no, I will not be. Do you know my lineage? Bring me a quill.
I am a bleeder.
So I don't know. But he does levy a curse upon his death, and he decrees that if anyone attempts to steal his land away ever again, his spirit will return to terrorize the perpetrators. You okay? Are you being cursed by Jeff?
No.
Is that Jeffrey?
Jeffrey.
If you're in the room, burp twice.
So no one can ever own that stuff ever.
No one can take it away from
his lineage. Okay.
His lineage. Yeah.
His extremely, physically gifted lineage.
Yeah. I think alpha male is the way to
say sad little sponge children.
Yeah, his little mega chads. Mm-hmm. Specifically, he said that anyone who divided up the estates would, quote, feel the curse of Almighty God, of Saint Mary, of Blessed James the Apostle, and of all the saints in this present life, and that in life to come may he receive everlasting torment with the traitor Judas, unless he repents and makes amends. This is the curse.
He asks one apostle to torture you like the other apostle. It doesn't track. This seems like a lot of blood loss is going on before he started writing this.
I don't know. I don't know if you know about the whole like Apostle Judas thing, but that's when they like to torture a lot.
Yeah.
He did bad stuff.
Yeah, but the Apostle James, he's the one. He's the one you got to watch out for.
Well, James is he's the righteous one. He's gonna,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I think so.
And the Virgin Mary.
Well, Saint Mary, so that's different. He didn't specify which Saint Mary. There are lots of Saint Marys. I don't think it's the Virgin Mary. She's way too pure for this.
She's super busy as well. It's not.
Let's see. James, what I'm going to check you. What is James the Apostle famous for? ChatGPT says James the Apostle, also known as James the Greater.
Oh.
12 apostles. He's one of the first, which is great. Part of Jesus's inner circle.
Right, of course.
He's there for the transfiguration.
Anything but enforcing, torturing,
Zealous nature.
Okay.
James and John were nicknamed a word I do not know how to pronounce, but it meant sons of thunder.
Interesting. Okay, so this is the Bear Jew. That's what I hear. This is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to continue this just for a second before I forget, but I do want you to circle back on the Bear Jew so you can explain to everyone what that is in case they don't know. For example, they once suggested calling down fire from heaven to destroy a Samaritan village that rejected Jesus. And I will remind you, the Samaritans are actually well-renowned for one of their member who was actually quite kind and lived as Jesus would want. James is the first of the apostles to be martyred.
Oh, well.
He was killed by King Herod.
Well.
That's a big one. Patron saint of Spain. He's a symbol of courage and faith. Anyway, okay. So, go on. Back to, go ahead, Bear Jew.
Yeah, no, from Inglorious Bastards.
Yeah, I know. And just in case.
Is it Eli
Roth?
Eli Roth's character in there?
I think it was, right? Let's ask ChatGPT. Bear Jew, Eli Roth. Let's see what that happens. Yeah, Donnie Donowitz.
Yes, Donnie Donowitz. He was the enforcer on the squad.
He sure was. For such a small guy, I'll tell you what.
Mm-hmm.
Good results.
Fall like a bear.
Fall like a bear. Well, there you go. Let's see. So anyway, so he levies this very specific curse, and people are like, all right, whatever.
Everybody that dies back then curses everybody. And like it's hard to know which one to take seriously.
With whatever breath you have, you are cursing something.
Mm-hmm. It was actually part of the last rites until the whole Reformation.
Oh Lord, look down upon this person who has but one last curse to make. Go ahead, this is your pot, son.
My mother-in-law. No, not fair. No. Too many mother-in-law things.
But she's the worst.
They're all the worst, son.
Now, obviously, Jeffrey was on the outs with King Stephen when he died, and the king, I think the king had him excommunicated from the church.
Ah, okay.
Of course, at this point, the king is the head of the church.
Sure.
Yeah. So then when he dies, Jeffrey is denied a proper Christian burial.
Oh, no.
So instead, his body is taken to the Knight Templar Temple in London and hung from a tree in a lead casket. And I...
that is a... What kind of tree? I'm sorry. What kind of fucking tree can you hang a lead casket from?
I don't know. I did a little bit of research. I could have gone way deeper to figure out what the fuck is going on here. I did Google a couple of things and nothing made any sense. So I don't know. But this is what
I just have mechanical questions about this. This is a lead casket is very massive. Very heavy.
Every time I go to the dentist, they put that lead vest on me. I suffocate. Yeah. I'm like gasping for air. So I can't imagine having an old casket from a tree.
So well, I went to the dentist last week and you know, I was getting x-rays on the teeth and the hygienist, she goes, well, we have to do x-rays. Okay. And she goes, so the ADA tells us we don't, have to put the lead vest on you anymore. but if you'd like it, it's still sitting right there. And I said, no, I still want the lead vest. It's yeah, still, I think
let's hedge that back. That feels pretty good.
I appreciate you keeping the lead vest around and not just like throwing it out or anything. I promise I won't like lick the vest or anything. Right. You know, it's safe with me. So yeah, I wore the vest. I think it was a good choice.
Yeah, feels good. I want as few x-rays going through my body as possible.
It's actually very soothing. It's like a weighted blanket.
It's like a weighted blanket.
Yeah.
It is kind of nice.
I think next time I'll see if they can do the entire like cleaning just with the lead vest on. It might be kind of
I'm
going nice.
To say like, can you actually put me in a lead casket and hang me from a tree while you do this? Because it sounds actually very nice.
This does it reeks of like the sparrow carrying the coconut though. Like I could definitely see John Cleese screaming about the sheer insanity. A lead casket, it weighs thousands of pounds.
We should call Monty Python.
We should.
We should call Eric Idle when he was alive. I don't know how many of them are, but Eric Idle is for sure.
He has to be.
Yeah, he might be into this. Okay, so this has happened. I don't know, supposedly. Now this is going on. Now Jeffrey's son, who is Jeffrey the Third, he's just like going around begging everyone to just please let my dad just be buried like a normal person. Mm-hmm. Please don't hang him from this tree in a lead casket anymore. Like, what are we doing? And why is it in a lead casket?
Also, this poor tree, if for nothing else.
And so the prior of Walden Abbey, which is an abbey on one of Jeffrey's estates, he's like, okay, I'll see what I can do. And he does some work and he gets Jeffrey's excommunication revoked.
Oh, okay.
So he does the work. Mm-hmm. We're both like having terrible burping fits at the same time. That's what this show is all about. So eventually... Once this happens, he's no longer excommunicated, the Templars are like, okay, all right, fine, fine. We will cut him down. They take him down from the tree, and they do bury him inside the temple.
Oh, okay.
So he's got a real burial. It's not on one of his properties, but it's in the Knights Templar.
Mm-hmm. It's indoors.
That's a big bonus.
Me and you aren't going to be buried indoors, I'll tell you that much.
I don't imagine I will be. Absolutely not. You're going to be flushed down a toilet in a Steak and Shake, if I remember correctly, or Denny's.
That may qualify, actually. So you might be the only one not buried indoors.
What should I do?
Again, you could shoot for the stars like I did, or you could just be happy with some chunk of grass somewhere.
I have told Aaron, like, what I would really like is just, like, I think cremation is cool, but I don't, you know, I would love to find a cremation thing that is, let's find a version that's not so bad for the environment. It takes, you know, a lot of energy.
Sure.
As far as I'm concerned, like I take my dead body, strap it to the nose cone of a rocket. Next time one goes up, it does not, don't like schedule one. Just like time one goes up, just duct tape me to the top. Mm-hmm. When I go through the atmosphere, I assume I will burn up.
I don't know. Maybe. Worst case scenario, you're in outer space.
Yeah, so which is great for my body.
Your kids can brag about that. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I'm 6.5 feet tall. I have weighed so much my entire life. It would be glorious to be weightless for eternity. That sounds great. Anyway, so, but Jeffrey's buried inside finally. And so that's all good for a while. But in 1541, so we're like 400 years later, Henry VIII, he was a bit of a disturber. Mm-hmm.
I've heard he's the song. Disrupting. I'm familiar with his work.
I've seen lots of drawings of headless women. I think I know what's going on here. He makes some big changes here. And one of those changes is the dissolution of the monasteries.
Okay.
Which was a big thing that happened that was important. And the only thing I know about it is that one of the things that happened was it divided up Geoffrey de Mandeville's estates and gave them away to just people.
Oh, the one thing he didn't want to happen.
This is the one thing. And so
I was so specific in my curse.
Well, Jeffrey's spirit is like, you son of a bitch. Did you not hear what I said? I spent so many of my last breaths doing this one very specific curse. And his ghost gets very agitated. And thus begins the haunting of Hertfordshire and East Barnet.
Oh.
Which I think are two areas of England that at one point belonged to Geoffrey and his family. So on Christmas Eve of that year, and this is where the Christmas tie-in comes in.
We are at 1 hour and 7 minutes.
We've done it. On Christmas Eve of that year, a group of folks spot a headless hound wandering the countryside.
Pretty gross.
It's horrible, but also I'm so curious, like, is it like blood dripping? Are there like veins coming out?
Right.
Is it like a clean thing?
Is it like cartoon? Like a mutant, like that just never had a head? I don't know.
Yeah. Is it a stump? I don't know. I have no information on that, but the dog was accompanied by a ghost knight wearing ghost armor and wearing a red ghost cloak. And this cloak was very easily recognizable as belonging to Geoffrey de Mandeville.
Oh, did it have the big anarchy sign on the back of it? Is that his?
Uh-huh.
Okay. That makes sense now.
Yeah. So this was pretty concerning for the folks who saw it. But then for a long time after that night, he rises up once, wanders around. People are like, what the fuck?
But like,
it's
the third weirdest thing they've seen that year. So it's not that big. I mean, it's not like.
Yeah. It is a great tragedy of our time, truly, that like in the 11th century, ghosts were more common, but also not the weirdest thing you'd see. And now they are so super rare, but would be the most insane thing you would see. Ugh. Oh, to live in 1146. So he's quiet for a while, but then a few centuries later in 1926, Geoffrey's property in East Barnet is torn down and a new structure is built in its place, a building called The Grange.
Oh.
During the excavation process, the foundation of Geoffrey's house was, quote, disturbed.
Yeah.
Which I think is typically the case.
Yeah, I don't think you want to build on top of an 800-year-old foundation. Yeah.
And this disturbance, once again, triggered the curse. Geoffrey, once again, super pissed. He waits it out, though, until Christmas Eve, at which point he decides to rise up again, and he haunts the hell out of this newly built Grange building all night long.
Ooh. But it's New Year's Eve. So
no, it's Christmas Eve.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's Christmas Eve.
I think I've been clear about that.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's Christmas Eve.
Embarrassing.
We'll fix that in post. So it's Christmas Eve.
Yeah, of course.
Are there a lot of people in the building?
There are.
Okay.
I don't know why, but there was also like this episode of like Downton Abbey where like everyone stayed there for Christmas.
Okay.
Like Christmas Eve, and there was like usually in Downton Abbey there's only 100 people, but on Christmas Eve there was like 200 people.
Okay.
So. That's probably a reason for that. Anyway, so people sleeping inside on that Christmas Eve heard the terrifying sounds of hooves and spurs clanking out on the road. Only terrifying because when they looked, there was not an army as they expected, but a skeleton with a metal breastplate and a red cloak riding on a horse.
Oh, yeah. That is worse. That is worse. Yeah.
And he was, of course, accompanied by a headless hound.
Oh, man.
After that Christmas, Jeffrey laid back down to rest. He was quiet again for about a decade. But during World War II, the Templar Temple... Templar Temple, where he was buried, was really badly bombed by the Germans. Mm. Your people, I think. Is that right?
Go on.
And the burial vaults were all exposed after the bombing. So looters come in, they ransack the whole place because they're super cool.
They're desperate for lead. Just places chock-a-block with it.
I haven't licked anything in years, and I just need some lead.
I've been eating British cooking for 10 solid years. Give me some sort of flavor.
Please drive me insane. So coffins are smashed on the floor, and during this whole thing, the skull of Jeffrey de Mandeville is stolen.
I mean, you know, this is London in the Blitz here, so anything that isn't nailed down.
Hey, man. Yeah. It's a catch-as-catch-can, I think they say. There is a theory that there was, like, a private collector who just, like, snuck in and yoinked it. I don't know what you have to be a private collector of to steal Jeffrey de Mandeville's skull, but it sounds really exciting.
I'm either a historian or a sicko.
Could be both.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
So now they've really pissed off Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. He's just like, fucking shit, come on. So he waits again until Christmas Eve for whatever reason. Christmas Eve comes and he is back, baby. He's back. He's haunting the countryside with his gross, weird dog. But this time is different. He's so mad. This time he doesn't go back to rest.
Mm.
Well, in a way he does, but mostly not. So now Jeffrey's ghost continues to haunt the old estates every 6 years.
Every 6 years. Okay.
Every 6 years on Christmas Eve, all the way through Christmas Eve inning.
Mm-hmm.
See what I did there?
Yeah.
Christmas Eve through evening.
Right.
24 hours.
Right. Yep.
Yep. And I will tell you, the last time he was seen was 2022.
Which would be... What? Oh, yeah, yeah. 4 years from now to come back.
Okay, well, you did the math. I did the math for you. That's fine. Okay. He will be back in 2028. Every once in a while we throw out this idea, but I'll say it again now because it seems good. We got 4 years to build up enough of an audience. Mm-hmm. To pay for us to go to England for the holidays, and we could do a live show in this area and try to hunt down Jeffrey de Mandeville in 2028.
Mm, that's a plan.
So if that's not an incentive to share the show with your friends, I don't know what is. But that is what he wanders around with his red cloak as a skeleton with his headless hound. But only once every 6 years. And this is the heartwarming tale of Jeffrey, the Christmas Eve ghost.
Jeffrey!
Any questions? Jeffrey!
Jeffrey!
Jeffrey! Any questions?
No, everything was cleared up. I had a couple earlier. Sure? Because I had a couple. I wrote them down, but they were answered as we went along. So that okay. was fine.
I did anticipate one additional question you might have had, which is why the fuck is he only on Christmas Eve? Is that a question that kind of entered your head at all?
A little bit. I mean, it was convenient for the show, and I figured, you know, you're doing the research at midnight. I'm not gonna bug you too much about it.
I appreciate that. You are the best co-host a co-host could ask for. But by the end of it, because I was looking like, are there Christmas ghosts? And this was one that kept coming up. I was like, okay, let's check it out. And so it makes sense why he's on the list, but also like no one is like, here's why he owns a Christmas Eve. So I did take one extra step, a little bonus here. Mm. I asked ChatGPT why Jeffrey de Mandeville only haunts on Christmas Eve. ChatGPT has some theories. Do you want to hear?
I do. Yes.
We've got five theories.
Oh, that's too many. Let's go through top three.
All right. Number one, punishment for sacrilege.
Oh, okay.
Geoffrey was excommunicated for seizing church lands, so his ghost might be cursed to wander on Christmas Eve, a holy night, as penance for his crimes.
Okay, sure.
Okay, that's one. Mm-hmm. Number two, restless ambition.
Oh, yeah. I could see that.
As a powerful and ruthless medieval baron, Geoffrey might return on the most symbolic night of peace and goodwill to contrast his own chaotic legacy with the holiday's serenity.
I think that would be Boxing Day, though. But it's whatever. It's fine.
I think that's Canadian. I don't know if that's the same. And number three, traditional ghost hours.
I don't know if I believe this.
Well, let's listen. Let's keep an open mind. Ghosts in folklore often appear during liminal times, midnight solstice or major festivals, Christmas Eve, sitting at the intersection of the darkest days of winter and the promise of renewal, makes an ideal ghostly time slot.
Interesting. Okay, I can see that.
There are two more. Do you want to hear them?
Yeah, why not? I got time.
All right, I need to get you. Number four, historical layering. Medieval ghost stories often developed around existing festivals to enhance their eeriness. Linking Geoffrey to Christmas Eve could have been a storytelling tactic to make his haunting resonate more.
Okay, so this one's that one's a little more on my side, frankly.
Yeah. It doesn't help the podcast much. Yeah. And then number five, or maybe Geoffrey just had a flair for the dramatic and knows that's when everyone's in a good mood for a scary tale. So I don't know if ChatGPT knows about Halloween.
May want to stop that one at three. Just a thought.
Yeah, we'll fix that in post. But that's a story, and it's a very Christmassy story in the sense that it happens on Christmas and for no apparent reason. Any thoughts? Final thoughts from you, Patrick?
No, I can't wait to see what next year's Christmas ghost is going to be because it's going to be.
I'll tell you, it's Slim Pickens. There's. Not a lot. I'll do what I can, but there's not a lot.
We should start reading A Christmas Carol every year for the podcast. Just like,
you know, and actually we could do like, what if we do like one ghost at a time? Because there are four ghosts in that book. Mm-hmm. That's 4 years of our content.
I love it. Yes.
Yeah.
We should read a fourth of Dickens Christmas Carol. Over the course of like 7 hours on this show. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Over 4 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People will, I think, really like that. I think
people gravitate to it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll think about it. In the meantime, this has been another episode of Is This a Ghost? We are a production of Smith Show Media. All the notes this week were taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes were from Patrick Dean. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. And our social media managers are Kai Valonis and Sam Murdoch. This has been a good Christmas episode. Merry Christmas, everybody. Whatever you're celebrating, I hope you have a good one. We celebrate Christmas, so we extend our merriest of that to you. And whatever it is that's jolly in your jollies this time of year, that night, I immediately regret saying that. But we do hope that that you have a good holiday season. And you know, in the meantime, I would say if you're going to look, you got to pick one king. You got to pick one king. You can't do two. If you do, it's almost guaranteed that you are going to end up on the next episode of Is This a Ghost? Jeremy would like you to stop running your goddamn clothes washing machine during our show. Those are my words, not his words, but he did bring it up.
I'm not doing it. Am I?
Yeah. Sometimes you do.
Sometimes I do. I'm not running it right now, Jeremy.
Will it be running before the end of this episode?
Jeremy will let you know. Jeremy.
Could be something else, Jeremy.
Here's the deal. Big family. Not a lot of room for a podcast down here. I'm literally sitting on top of the washing machine while we're recording this. And sometimes that's where my funny juices come from. It's from the tumble cycle, from the rumble cycle.
On top of it for work and for pleasure.
gone through four washing machine motors this decade. Seems like too many.